Coffee Talk includes real talk that may not vibe with some listener preferences. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, glad you could join us on Coffee Talk.
I'm Jessie.
And I'm Kat.
We're two friends that could not be more different.
Besides our love for multiple beverages and melodramatic TV shows.
We drink coffee.
Talk about coffee.
Catch up with you all.
And have a real good coffee talk. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Coffee Talk. So glad you're here. Just to kind of start off, I really want to apologize on our behalf for the technical difficulties that led to this episode coming out a week later than usual. It was so frustrating because we basically did the entire recording, and it happened to be such a long recording, as in 2.5 hours long, that we were going to have to split the episode into two parts to begin with. And then when I sat down to edit, the sound sounded terrible. Like, we are not about to put you guys through the horrible sound that was with the episode. I still don't really know what happened, but we just did a test run, so hopefully nothing goes wrong with this one.
We're gonna blame it on the weather.
Yeah, we'll blame it on the weather. So anyway, sorry again for delaying this episode for a week, but now it's gonna be better than ever because we've basically already recorded this content. So now we're just gonna have it on lockdown, and it's gonna be great. that's the positive side of things. So there's that little disclaimer. And then also, I did want to remind everyone that we still have some Valentine's Day merchandise. So buy it up. We're going to keep it on the website until March 6th. So you still have time. I tend to celebrate Valentine's Day the whole month of February. It's just like the month of love, in my opinion. But some designs are for people like me that are super lovey-dovey. I know Jessie's like gagging right now. And then some of the designs are more for people that aren't super lovey-dovey, but still, you know, think the holiday's all right. So there's something for everyone.
Yeah, and also we're a little goofier this time because we actually are recording, what do you call it?
Our faces? I mean, it's a video recording.
What I was trying to say is our recording software. That's the word. I know words. Our recording software now has video streaming, so we can now see each other as we're recording, and it's another level.
It's another level. And, you know, might as well do the promo here anyways, but this is something we're going to hope to offer to our Patreon subscribers, even like lower levels. So even if you can only handle like a $2 a month donation, which totally understandable. We're struggling 20-somethings. We get it. Or something higher. I don't know. Anyways, Jessie does all the business side of things. This will probably be something that we put on our Patreon. So if you're a monthly donating subscriber, then you'll get access to see our videos of us while recording, as well as the unedited recording. You guys probably figured this out, but we usually edit the recording. We edit out some of the ums, buts, ands, yas, so yas. There's still quite a few in the recording, but there's even more in the rough version. And there's also sometimes we mess up or we swear in ways that we shouldn't. So the unfiltered video and audio will be something that we hope to offer to Patreon subscribers coming soon.
Okay. What are you drinking? What nasty ass stuff are you consuming in that cup today?
Yeah, so I have been trying stuff at Starbucks just because I want to use this podcast as an excuse to do so. So whenever we're recording, I've been trying to go and get like a new drink at Starbucks. And I have really stayed to the same couple of drinks that I like for years now because I didn't used to get coffee very regularly. So when I did get coffee, I was like, yeah, I'll just take the same thing because I know I like it and I don't want to waste this one time I'm getting coffee like a month on something that I may end up hating and I can't drink. But now that I'm drinking it a little more regularly and it's not just like a Keurig cup, I have been experimenting. So when we originally made this recording, I do want to give this an honorable mention. I tried this drink based on a recommendation from a friend who also tries like random combinations. So it was a grande double shot on ice with caramel syrup, salted cream foam, and toffee syrup. So I'd give it like a 7 out of 10. It was a little too bitter because of all the nutty syrups and flavors. I think it would have been better with a different, like, not toffee nut maybe. But the salted cream foam was cool. Like, I don't know if it fit very well with the drink, but yeah, it was good. It was very salty. So it's like any sort of drink that would be good, like coffee drink that would be good with a salty aftertaste, I guess, is how to describe it. Jessie's making this face right now that she just looks absolutely disgusted. But I promise you, there is good behind it. It would, okay. Anyways.
You're making it sound like you enjoy bitter, salty coffee.
That's like salty and sweet. So that was, I wanted to give that a mention because that was like last week. And then this week I asked the barista for a recommendation. I just told him that I really like anything with cinnamon. So he recommended a grande white mocha with 2 pumps of cinnamon dolce syrup. And it's pretty good. It's a little reminiscent of like a pumpkin spice latte, but like better, you know, not as like sugary sweet, if that makes sense. What about you, Jess?
Well, besides just puking in my mouth from your description, I'm just having coffee that was brewed with honey in it, as well as nutmeg and cinnamon. Yeah, so it's just a nice warm cup of coffee. And I'm someone that puts the milk in first and then pours the coffee in.
Smart.
So I don't have to stir it, essentially. Also, I think there's some coffee left in my little French press, so I'm just gonna do some, what's left of my ASMR.
Ooh! This is now an ASMR podcast.
Yep, I just wanted every last drop, you know? Nothing to waste. Alright. So, how have you been?
Honestly, I've been a little overwhelmed. I feel like I'm trying to jump into crazy mode and do a million things and be super productive, and the motivation just isn't there. I don't know if it's like the season or I'm just kind of struggling with some recent events. Still not quite ready to discuss on the podcast. So really, I'm keeping everyone in suspense here because I mentioned it last podcast too. But yeah, I'm just trying to get over some stuff and then also like find a job, and I'm working in 2 research labs, and oh yeah, also I got a new dog. So I mentioned a few podcast episodes ago that my mom had gotten a new dog, but then near the end of January, Goldie and I actually also got a new dog. We already had a dog named Ranger, and he's an almost 3-year-old little wiener dog, and he is the cutest thing in the world. And we started to come to the realization that really soon, like, I'm going to be in vet school full time and he's going to be in a full time job, and Ranger is going to be alone from 8 to 5, probably Monday through Friday. And that's going to get really lonely for him really fast because he does not do super well being alone. Like, he's definitely very attached. So we decided that now, when things are a little bit chill, quote unquote chill, for both of us, like, he's still in online school because our university is like mostly online, so he only has to go to an in-person class like twice a week and stuff like that, that we would take the leap and get a new dog. So we did, because we found one and we both really connected with it. She's really cute. She's also a wiener dog. She is 3 months old today, actually, so we got her super young. It was very difficult at first. And yeah, we named her Chevy. So that's kind of what's going on with me. But Jess, how have things been with you?
Things have been good. Badger and I went shooting a couple weekends ago. He got a new toy. I don't know if he wants me to talk about his firearms, but he got a new firearm and we needed to scope it and try it out. And we also brought another older firearm of his that I got a new scope for to get it focused. And so that was fun. I'm not a big gun person, so that I don't want to misrepresent myself. But I do like basically precision games, and I like to go shooting to practice precision. Also, I am a gun owner because I have a vagina and I live alone. So kind of a necessity.
Smart human move.
Don't judge. Yeah. So, yeah, so that was exciting. That was fun. I definitely felt like the ironic, the odd man out at the gun range, because usually it's all men there. And there was hardly anybody there, which is the only reason why we went. So this is what I was going to talk to you about before the recording, and then I decided to include it. So yesterday I was working, and there was a customer, and it was one of those customers where she just likes to hear herself talk, but she's also really complimentary. So she's just babbling along and complimenting me. And then, you know, every few words I get in, I'm just like mentioning things that happen to be what she's talking about. And I mentioned that I'm, you know, interested in politics, and I have a degree in political science and international studies with a focus in peace studies. And she was like, well, what do you want to do with that? And as I was talking to her about what I want to do, which, if I haven't mentioned it before, I want to essentially revolutionize the peacemaking process, to put it simply.
Easy.
As I was talking to her about it, I realized that that is what I want to do, and that's exactly how I want to do it, if that makes sense, of like what I have in mind. I want to work for the UN. I want to gain my reputation there as a peacemaker, and I want to build bridges and kind of, I don't know what the word is for, but essentially like create new paths for peacemaking in the UN sphere. Mm-hmm. And I had been talking to Kat and my brother and Badger kind of about having a quarter life crisis about what I want to do, and whether or not I just want to ditch that plan and do something else, or like, you know, having other ambitions that conflict with that. And after talking with this random person over the phone who liked to hear herself talk, I just kind of realized that no, like, I definitely want to. What I decided, you know, as I went to college, like the first year I went to college, I decided I wanted to do that. I still want to do that very much.
Still the plan.
Yeah, that's still the plan. And so, yeah, so that was like kind of affirming, I guess. And yeah, so I like put a little sticky note on my mirror that says like my name, Esquire, Representative USA.
Yes.
I'm going to get going on my French again. I know I said like in the third episode that I was gonna get back into it, but I lied. I'm a liar. I'm so sorry. I'm gonna get back into it. Cause I love French. I didn't like it before I started learning it. Once I started learning it back in forever ago in June, I loved it. Like every word was like a blessing, and just rolled off the tongue. And then I started working from home and that just fell apart. So I'm just get back into it. I've now said it in a actual recording in front of Kat's face. So it's happening.
Now I have to hold Jess to it now.
Yeah, you have to hold me accountable. I want you to ask me every time we talk, like, have you done your French today?
Okay. I'll message you on Words with Friends. Because we always play Words with Friends. I'll send you a little message and be like, have you done your French today?
Mm-hmm. Y'all, she has an addiction.
Man, I don't want to take too much time. I will be super fast, I promise, but this is actually a funny story. So I think when I was how old was I? It had to have been middle school. It had to have been middle school. So in middle school, when the iPod Touch came out and stuff like that, I really wanted one, but it was super expensive. Summer rolls around and my mom and I move into a house, and there's like a really large lawn, and she was paying so much money for someone to come out and mow that she goes, you know, Kat, I will make a deal with you that if you mow the lawn all summer and fall, like once a week, every week without fail, so I don't have to pay someone to come out and do it, then I will get you a iPod Touch for Christmas, because you would have saved me so much money from hiring that I could afford one for Christmas. So I was like, absolutely. Like, I will work for this. That sounds great.
That's a bargain.
Yes, that is a bargain. So I was like, I will gladly do that. So I did. I mowed all summer and fall. And I'm like a pretty scrawny person, but I was super scrawny in middle school. So it was a little bit of a struggle, but I enjoyed it. So I worked my butt off, and then on Black Friday, like, we went out shopping, and they had this huge deal on an iPod Touch. So my mom bought it, and like, I physically saw her buy it, and I was so excited. And in the car, I was like cradling the box. I was like, oh my God. And then she's like, you don't get that till Christmas. And I was like, what? And she's like, it's a Christmas present. Just because you saw me buy it today because there was a deal, like, you don't get it till Christmas. So I was devastated. Waiting that extra month felt like a lifetime. So then on Christmas morning, I open up all my packages and it's not there. And I figure it's in the stocking. But my family does a tradition where we wait till stockings until after Christmas dinner at like 6 p.m. with pie. So again, I had to wait longer in the day for this. And then we open stockings and it's not there. And I'm like, Mom, this is cruel. Just get me the damn iPod Touch. And she's like, like, she thinks it's hilarious. So does the rest of my family. And then eventually I find this little package like in the tree. And it's there, right? And like, I open it and it was yay, happy day. And then 2 days later, I went over to my dad's house. And like, obviously I brought my iPod Touch to show him all the cool things. And I was walking up the stairs and I tripped. And he lived in a townhouse at the time. So the stairs were like outside the building, you know, and they were like concrete, and I tripped, and my hand was holding the iPod Touch and it slammed into the corner of the concrete steps and just broke in half, like destroyed beyond use. I started crying so hard. My dad did not know what to do. I could not get a word out. He called my mom. He's like, I don't know what to do. She's crying for 10 minutes now and she won't stop and she won't even tell me what's wrong. And then my dad was like, I'll pay for a new one. Just stop crying. And that makes my dad sound like such a bad parent. I swear he was such a good parent. He cared so much for me. It was like he couldn't stand to see me cry for that long that he was like, I will pay any amount of money so you're not. Yeah, so you're not in this much anguish. I can only remember 3 times in my life that my dad ever raised his voice at me. I don't know if it's because of his own upbringing, but he always had this philosophy that like he never wanted to yell at me, like raise his voice at me. And he kept to that my whole childhood. And the only times I remember him like yelling at me, one was like a fight, yeah. But the other one was when like I broke a huge glass vase and I almost stepped on the glass and he was like, no, get away from there. Yeah, so that was more like a cautionary tale.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything scarier than like having your dad yell at you in fear that you're gonna hurt yourself. Like that moment where they're like, don't! And you can like see the fear and the severity in their face because you're about to like hurt yourself and they just stopped you from it. But like their face was like, I don't know what's it's
scary.
Like
scary.
Yeah, it's like a different scary than seeing your dad cry, you know? Like seeing your dad cry is a... It's watching rough. Like pure anguish. My dad's a big cry baby now. Because it's so like he cries when he's happy. He cries when he's sad. He's menopausal. It's called menopause. Yeah. That took you way too long.
Everyone will be pleased to know that the iPod Touch did get repaired. I think it ended up only being like $100 to repair it because it like, I think maybe it was just the screen that was destroyed or something and that's why it wouldn't turn on. But my parents split the cost and I was happy again. But yeah, it was a pretty tragic time in my childhood. But that's where, I don't even remember why I started that story, to be honest with you.
Yep. So let's finish off the intro. What are you listening to?
Just Hone, H-O-N-N-E. Check them out. Great band, good vibes. Jess?
Love it. Haven't been listening to music. I don't know. I attempted to listen to modern rock music. Garbage. It's like sad boy scene music or like emo music, but with more auto-tune and pretty good guitar solos. So it's not what I'm into. I wanted more Dave Grohl. New age gotcha. Dave Grohl. That's what I wanted. Didn't get that. I got more like...
Aren't they releasing a new album soon? Or tour?
Yeah, they are. He's old. He still looks good, though.
I think he wants his daughter to take over for him in the band. like as a drummer, right? He's a drummer, right? For Foo Fighters? Am I thinking of the right person?
Dave Grohl is the singer.
Okay, then it's the drummer.
The drummer wants his daughter to
take over. Yeah.
That would be so cute.
Yeah. I mean, she's, to my understanding, she's young, but like she's already a little protege, so.
I believe that. That's cute. Okay, moving on.
Topic. I'm going to introduce the topic because this episode was my idea. I'm trying to convince Jesse to make it an annual thing, but we'll see because she doesn't seem super into the idea. I wanted to do an episode reviewing popular shows, and since right now Netflix is getting a lot of hype, I wanted to do Netflix originals. So it's a little fluffier, but I think we have some deep context to it. I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the really popular shows and movies on Netflix right now that are getting a lot of attention. And since award season's coming out, a lot of these have been nominated for various awards. And I want to talk about if Jesse and I believe the hype and kind of like our honest opinions about the social context of each of these. So Jess, start us off with some background on Netflix popularity because I'm sure it's interesting.
Yeah, so Netflix, booming. Basically the cause of the death of Blockbuster.
Why?
Because it started in 1998, I think I said. Yeah, 1998. And started out with, you know, just mailing the DVDs. And then if y'all are old enough to remember that. And then started streaming. So today, 204 million subscribers subscribe to Netflix streams in the fourth quarter of 2020.
And that's probably even more too, considering all the people that mooch or like share accounts. So that's probably like another few million.
Yeah, definitely. I am one of those. Yes.
Me as well.
So no surprise here. Top streamed show on Netflix, The Office for 2020, with a total of 57.1 billion minutes.
I think about a million of those minutes came from Goldie alone. He is obsessed with The Office. I don't know what it is, but like he's seen it so many times now that he can just listen to the audio and it plays as a video in his mind. So he'll like go to work and put his headphones in and listen to The Office, and he just does that over and over. Yeah.
I might try that because honestly, I don't like watching The Office. It is visually boring to me, but maybe
definitely
the audio would
it
be
is
more
so
entertaining.
Funny. Like as someone who I watched it a couple times before meeting Goldie, and then when Goldie and I first started like hanging out, we would watch it because it was common ground, you know, and easy to watch, stuff like that. And then, you know, being dating him for the past 3 years, like I've seen it a lot more. And it is a hilarious show. Like 100%, I get the hype. It definitely is a little hard to get through some of the earlier seasons. But yeah.
Yeah. Badger and I have this saying now because we started watching. We actually found a show that we could watch together, which is such a struggle for us. And it was the Great British Baking Show.
That is a
and
good
actually,
show.
And actually in England, I think it's called the Great British Bake Off or something like that. It's Bake Off instead of Baking Show. And I watched ahead. And now whenever we have a show that we watch together and one of us watches ahead, we say, "You bake off to me."
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a jerk move to
And he
to
did
go
that.
Ahead.
He bake-offed me on, what is it called? Disenchantment.
Disenchanted, the animated
Disenchanted,
one.
Yeah. Netflix net revenue over 2020 came to $710 million in the first quarter of 2020. $720 million in the second quarter, $790 million in the third quarter, and then a mere 540 million in quarter four.
Jeez.
So sad for them. Okay. Yep. So we all know that Netflix is just rolling in the dough. Obviously, mostly Gen Z and millennials subscribe to Netflix. A lot of, you know, Gen X and some boomers do too, but the majority is Zoomers and millennials. And then, since this is a friendship podcast, I thought it would be interesting to know that 17.7% of subscribers share their account with friends. So, that's not that much. Y'all need to
spread
share.
The love. Yeah.
Sharing is caring.
Yes. Now that we have those facts, we'll do a show-by-show analysis. So we've selected the following just because they're really new and, like, relevant and talked about a lot right now, so they're in the news. So the first is the show Bridgerton. The second is the movie Malcolm and Marie. The third is the movie Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. The fourth is the show Emily in Paris. And the fifth is the reality TV show Bling Empire. Without further ado, let's talk about Bridgerton. So Jesse, basically what we're going to do is Jesse's going to give us some statistics on each of the things we're talking about, and then I'll get more into like some talking points and we'll share our opinions. So Jess, tell me about the stats of Bridgerton.
Okay, so it was released December 25th, 2020. It's somehow 89% on Rotten Tomatoes. And Bridgerton was recently named one of AFI's top 10 programs of the year and earned 3 nominations at the NAACP Image Awards for Outstanding Drama Series, Outstanding Actor in a Drama Series for The Duke, and Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Drama Series for Lady Danbury. Which, that part I get, but the rest I don't. Anyways, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I wanted to briefly, since we talked about them being in the news, something that came up is a lot of people started kind of attacking the show for the fact that they had people of color in royalty positions because, you know, it wasn't like historically accurate enough or whatever. And I can't exactly remember what the response of the cast was. I do remember that it was very purposeful because Shonda Rhimes, who is also the creator of Grey's Anatomy, was the producer of this show as well. And she definitely set out to make it like just as dramatic as Grey's Anatomy, which I totally see the trend between the shows. But that was a very purposeful move on her part, to my understanding. And that they very briefly touched on it in the plot of Bridgerton. I guess the King of England married a black woman, and then that was what like changed things. So that is just what I understand, but they didn't really talk about it much in the show, which I also liked. It was definitely a cool thing to see, and I liked how it wasn't like the entire plot of the show, if that makes sense. They just, it was just how it was. That's just how it is. And then there was also some stuff I saw recently that a lot of people were upset that they were quote unquote snubbed for certain awards, like the bigger name awards. And yeah, so that's just another in the news type of thing for Bridgerton. Now onto talking points. So I'm going to start off here kind of like, do you get the hype / what's your honest review? When I had first like reviewed this with Jesse, and this was like a week ago, I had seen up to, I think, episode like 5, and there were 8 episodes in season 1, I believe. So I had seen like a good chunk of it, and I felt like I could make a really good review. And so originally I was going to say no, I don't get the hype. It was decent, like it was a decent show to watch because it kept your interest and stuff like that. But there were a lot of like random things that really bothered me. First of all, I got really upset at the fact that they created this character, like the main character, Daphne, the female protagonist, is supposed to be this really like kind of like feminist, independent. She really sets herself up as like wanting to marry for love, not just for like rank or title or anything, but that she was raised to try and marry up as much as possible. And then she like goes on this whole thing about not letting her older brother speak for her and like taking control of her future, again, setting her up to be this really independent character. And then basically this prince, and I don't mean just like, oh, prince, but like literally the nephew of the queen comes to town and he's the Prince of Prussia and like falls in love with her and literally asks for her hand in marriage. And she straight up turns him down, like turns him down because she kind of has this like lustful relationship with this other guy, the Duke. And the Duke over here is what they call a rake at that point in time. I guess it's like synonymous to a hoe. I don't know. But he sleeps around and he has intentions of literally never marrying, never having children. He never wants to settle down, all this stuff. And he basically like toys with her emotions and treats her like crap for the first few episodes. And she gives everything up, everything she was raised for her entire life, all the benefit it would bring to her family, because of this lustful relationship that she has with the Duke. And I just thought that was such crap. And it really pissed me off seeing that, because it seems so against this character that they tried to set up. So that's what really bothered me, is I thought that was so unrealistic. And I thought that I just wanted to slap her across the face for like doing that. Anyways, after finishing the show, I'm not saying that I necessarily completely changed my opinion, because there were certain things that I was rolling my eyes at, but the character development, not just like with the main characters, but all the subplots and all the sub-characters, actually got really interesting. They do reveal the identity of Lady Whistledown at the end, like the very end of the show of season one. Totally shocking. Like, I literally was like, oh my god. I mean, I kind of saw it coming, but also, very good twist. And it's just, I do want to change my review a little bit, that I do get the hype after watching all of it. Still don't think it's historically accurate. Still think it's definitely like a drama series and does a lot just for the drama effect, you know. But the way they develop the characters gets so, so good. Especially around like episode 6. It gets so much more interesting. The relationship becomes so much more believable and genuine. Yeah. Jesse has a very different opinion, though.
Yeah. It's garbage. Don't get the hype. It's Gossip Girl in a period piece. Not historically accurate in the slightest. And that's regardless of the race thing. Like, leaving that whole, like, portraying people of color and positions of power in England at that time, like just putting that away and not even recognizing that part, still just the day-to-day actions of the women and the way that they present themselves and the way that they walk and the way that they talk and the way that they sit, everything is wrong. It's like they put enough effort into playing dress up and not into actually playing the part. So to me, that's lazy acting and that's lazy producing. So I think it's a cheap soap opera.
Gotcha.
Yep.
So that kind of goes to the next option. It's really well known right now for being really like raunchy and having all these like super hot sex scenes and stuff like that. And Jesse only watched a few episodes, so that's also like, keep that in mind, that she only has a few episodes under her belt. And I think that's also similar to how I felt after watching only a few episodes. But then I got hooked into just, again, the character's development, which I thought was handled pretty well. And I didn't totally see what was coming, which is always refreshing. But anyways, my question is, was it really that raunchy?
I mean, from what I saw, no. And from what I can gather that the rest of the series is going to be like, no. But I also watch indie films and international films. Weak sauce.
I mean, again, I really didn't get that raunchy, and maybe that's what people were talking about when they were like, oh, it's so raunchy. It really didn't get that crazy until the last few episodes.
Do you think it was snubbed for awards?
I personally think the costume and like set design was pretty amazing. It really made me want to start dressing like that. I mean, no, I'm not trying to say that I would like or enjoy to be a woman in that time period, because yeah, that would be pretty awful. I thought that the costume and set design was really, so yeah, like I thought that that was really amazing. And that part I could see them being a little more like snubbed for, quote unquote. You mentioned earlier that you hated how, or I don't know if you actually did mention this, but I remember when we were talking about it originally, you hated how their string quartets and stuff like that would play musical renditions of popular pop songs like Today. So the instrumental version of what you would find on like Today's top hits on Spotify. And I actually thought that was a cool touch. And so I know it's not award worthy, but it was kind of like an interesting little thing, because I was, you know, like vibing with the music. I recognized the music, but I also love classical music, so I would have been fine either way. I just thought it was an interesting touch. I don't know if necessarily the acting, I mean, like, I thought they were really good actors, and they got a way, way more emotionally charged in the last several episodes versus like the first few. So I can see why they would be a little bit upset. But it wasn't like I was super blown away. And lastly, I really do enjoy history, but I'm not a buff by any means. So I'm sure it's not accurate. Like, I believe you when you say that. But it was refreshing to kind of just like see the way they did that, because usually period pieces are so historically accurate that it's very, it's almost like not as enjoyable, almost like Downton Abbey. But Downton Abbey is like such a slow burn too. And I'm just not a huge slow burn person. When it comes to TV. Anyways, I got a lot of enjoyment out of the series almost because it was, like you said, Gossip Girl in a period piece. I was more invested in like the drama, and then the fact that it was in this setting where like you can't hold hands, you know, out of wedlock. That's a scandal. Stuff like that. That was the part that it was so historically accurate that I did at least feel like that was portrayed well. Anyways, I don't know. It's kind of an incomplete opinion. I'm a little back and forth. I wouldn't necessarily say they were snubbed, but the costume and set design was really what I thought was the most powerful part of the show.
Yeah, I really liked the costume and set design. I thought it was really, I mean, clearly it was a well-funded production. Mm-hmm. It was very, very nice. I forgot.
Uh-huh. In the statistics part of it, that Bridgerton smashed all the records for Netflix. That was another reason why I started watching it and why I wanted to feature it, is because it wasn't just like a lot of hype, but I'm gonna literally like look up what the records were. So it was watched by 82 million households, so a 41% of Netflix's global audience, and it broke all of the records for one like show having viewers, that many viewers. So it shattered all of their viewing records, and that's another reason why I want to talk about it. Sorry, go ahead.
Totally. Yeah, again, don't get the hype. I don't think that they were snubbed for awards, because I don't think they should have gotten any awards besides the costume and set design. It was lazy acting, it was lazy production, the music, lazy. Like, they didn't put in the effort to do their research, so I'm not interested in watching it.
Fair enough. So, overall thoughts?
Garbage.
Garbage.
Trash.
Okay, there we go. I tried to convince Jess to watch more of it, but she wouldn't, which fair enough. Like, sometimes when you watch a show and it's just, you're like, I'm just not even going to bother wasting my time and energy on more. I think my overall is I would recommend watching it. I think stuff like this that is so in the news and like breaks all the records is worth giving a watch. I would recommend giving it a watch all the way through the first season, because I think you get more invested as you watch and it becomes more impressionable as you watch and just better overall as you watch. So, yeah.
Whatever. Okay.
Next show, because Jesse is really just done with that topic.
Yep.
Okay, now we're on to her second favorite show in the entire world, Emily in Paris. So I picked this again because it was super talked about, super in the news, and got nominated for some Golden Globes. So it's kind of like up there, if you will. Jesse, tell me about the stats.
Released October 2nd, 2020, 63% on Rotten Tomatoes. Again, don't know how. Lily Collins has Golden Globes nominations for Best Actress in TV Series and Musical Comedy, in musicals or comedy. Ashley Park, the Chinese friend.
Yeah,
was nominated for Critics' Choice Best Supporting Actress in Comedy Series. Show was nominated for Golden Globes Best TV Show in Musical or Comedy. Again, don't get it.
I do want to say one thing. It's like such a controversial show in the sense that some people either like love it or some people hate it. There doesn't seem to be any in between. But when people found out that it was nominated for all these like Golden Globes, you know, people were like expressing their views on Twitter or whatever. And then this one tweet went viral and it was like a producer or writer of the show Emily in Paris. And she was like, hey, I'm the producer and of Emily in Paris. And I'm just so shocked that we got nominated for a Golden Globe because I wrote this show as a joke. Like it was supposed to be a joke. And then everyone like took that seriously and it was on all these articles like writer of Emily in Paris admits show is a joke, all this stuff. And then it was found out that that was not the actual writer. Like it was just a joke. And again, cracks me up what sometimes people take as like Bible. They literally just thought that this random person on Twitter claiming to be a writer, like, yeah, that's legit.
Was the writer, yeah.
And anyways, I thought that was hilarious that so many people genuinely believed the idea that it was written as a joke. That's pretty telling.
About the quality of the show,
yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I would believe if it was written as a joke.
Oh, me too. When I read the original tweet and when I saw that, I literally was like, that makes so much sense.
Yeah, I get it now.
It's a satire. It's supposed to be dumb. Well, okay, yeah. So that's end of the statistics. So on to the talking points. Do you get the hype?
No. I could see why shitty white girls like it. But it's a shitty show that represents every shitty aspect of American culture minus the obesity. And it would be cool if it was in a satirical, artistic way of representing those things. But it wasn't. It was like matter of fact, like, look at me in my shitty American tourism culture. Mic drop.
Okay. So personally, I do see why people are hyped, but I don't necessarily agree with it. It does pan to a huge amount of like an audience. It makes sense why so many people liked it. Because it is so light, it is so fluffy, it shows a girl that kind of really plucky, good attitude, and gets put in a situation she doesn't know how to handle, and then rises to the occasion and ends up being super successful, all that kind of stuff. And it is cutesy, and it's, you know, some of the characters are definitely more well thought out, and some of them have way more depth, so there are some interesting subplots to it. Overall, I did enjoy watching it, but I enjoyed it because it was like a fluffy show to watch, if that makes sense. And on the other hand, though, I have literally no idea why it was nominated for Golden Globes. Like, what? That is insane. It wasn't, so it's in the comedy category. It wasn't that funny. Like, it wasn't, I was not laughing out loud at any point in the entire series. And also, I genuinely do not understand how Lily Collins got that nomination for Best Actress. Because again, I think she's very talented. Like, I've seen her in other works, and I think she's an amazing actress. But I thought this part was horrible. Like, I was embarrassed for her. I thought the character was so plain, so dumb. So it is so unrealistic that someone creates like a travel Instagram account or whatever, and then they just start gaining tens of thousands of followers overnight from posting like half-assed photos of a selfie of them at like a restaurant or a bistro or like a picture of their food or their daily coffee. That literally does not happen. That is every single white girl account in the history of ever. And there's no way that in the span of like 2 weeks or however long she's there for the premise of the show, she gets hundreds of thousands of followers. Absolutely not. So first of all, that is absolutely ridiculous. Second of all, Lily Collins deserves so much better. So much better. That role, so dull. So dull. She had no depth to her character. I would not care if whatever happened to that character. I liked everyone else and what they were doing way more that I enjoyed the like main protagonist. And also, well, I'm gonna talk about this later, but anyways, I get the hype because it's fluffy. I have no idea why the hell it was nominated for Golden Globes, because it is the most basic show, the most basic. Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is that you would get why 10-year-old little girls would like it.
I get why a wide range of girls in general would like it, because it is kind of showing...
It's as shallow as they are?
No, it shows, like, a dream, you know? Like, you're just living life, and you get this amazing job opportunity in a city as glorious as Paris, and you get to move there, and you have a decently nice apartment situation, and you get to start your dream job.
Yeah, were you bothered by the fact that it showed a girl moving to a new country, not speaking any of the language?
Oh, yes. This is the other thing that really, I was like, this is a joke, right? That's why I thought it was a satire. Because this girl, like, moves to Paris not speaking a single lick of French. And she shows up without even, like, a pocket translator or anything. Like, she shows up with her phone and Google Translate. And she's expecting to communicate at a job, like, in a company that, with most of the people that speak French. And that's also unrealistic that you would go to the like hub in Paris and you would be working at kind of like a smaller company and that all of your coworkers and your boss just happens to speak English. That would not happen. That is so unrealistic. Or even if they did speak like a little English, that it would be cognizant enough for you to like have meetings, give pitches, like communicate 100%. No. And that part was also a little bothersome because I was like, that is super unrealistic. But also, the way that she like dressed, the way that she acted, the way that even she spoke in certain circumstances was like spitting on the French culture 100%. And that's the part that pissed me off too, is you can't just, and this is what bothers me about American portrayal in like foreign countries, because it's true, is that it's acceptable to like move to a new country, not do any research about their customs, their cultures, mannerisms, the way to act, basically.
Their
and you just
language.
Come in and you're like just doing your own thing. And then if they get offended, you feel like you have the right to also be offended, that they're not accepting you when you're not doing anything to assimilate into their culture, which is what you should be doing. You should be assimilating. They should not cater to you. They should not have to speak English around you. They should not have to help you with your French or with understanding cultural norms. No. That is the part that pissed me off. And also the fact that after only like 2 or 3 episodes, her coworkers and like people around her starting accepting her, it's like, no, that would not happen. That would not happen. That part is what really bothered me about the show.
Yeah, I mean, I take pause with the word assimilate a little bit because that's a slippery slope. I don't expect her to abandon her culture. I just expect her to have a modicum of respect for the culture that she has walked into. So, I mean, like, obviously these things do not apply to refugees, to desperate immigrants. These things do not apply because in those circumstances, it's completely different. They're not taking a job opportunity that was handed to them when their boss fell pregnant. No.
Yeah.
Like, those people didn't have other options. They didn't have time to learn the language. They didn't have the resources to learn the language. Taking a moment to, like, clarify that this is a specific situation in which this is a privileged, you know, pretty well-off white woman who has the resources, the time, the education, and the ability to know better and to do better. And she failed to do so. She failed to recognize that she should do so. And she did not take the advice of people around her telling her to do so. So, mm-hmm. No, she's a garbage human being. And can we also point out of the token black guy in the office and the token Asian friend? That is.
And also, I'm just very briefly going to touch on this. But there was a scene later on in the series of when Emily goes to visit, like, some family friends or whatever, like, of that pretty blonde girl. And it's her family. And she ends up sleeping with the brother. And then the next day, she has this huge hickey on her neck. And, like, goes to breakfast with the family, like, with a hickey on her neck. Like, pretending, like, oh, it's so embarrassing. Which, like, that is so disrespectful, first of all. Second of all, then when it gets around that she, like, slept with the brother, everyone starts, like, giggling. And then she's like, what? What is it? Like, I'm allowed to have sex with whoever I want, thinking it's, like, they're laughing at the fact that she slept around. And then they're, like, he's, like, I can't remember his age. I think they said, like, 17, maybe. So, you know, like, on the older side of things. But then she's, like, oh, my God. And it's almost like a joke.
You mean of the older side? Of not legally able to consent in the United yes. States.
Yes. So anyways, and then it's like almost a little jokey thing. And it's like a funny little part, like an oops. And like, I was like,
oops.
Why oops. Yeah. Why was this glossed over?
Yeah.
Why was this acceptable for the show? Why was this glamorized? Like, oops, I slept with a 17-year-old kid.
So it's legal.
And like, I'm like 25.
Yeah, is that okay. The joke? Yeah, I don't see statutory rape as funny.
I was like appalled. I was like, wait a sec.
Yeah, and also, you know, just because you're in another culture doesn't mean that it's not statutory rape from your culture. Like, I mean, I don't know how the French do it. I don't know if it's legal. It doesn't matter because in the United States, and she is a United States citizen, it is statutory rape.
Let's get to a good production. Let's go to Malcolm and Marie. This is a movie starring Zendaya. I just have to mention that. She's great. Jesse, what are the stats?
So it's brand spanking new. Released February 5th, 2021. Somehow only got 59% on Rotten Tomatoes. And then Critics' Choice Movie Awards voted Best Actress for Zendaya. As well as Next Gen Celebration of Black Cinema for Zendaya, and then also nominated for Hollywood Critics Association Best Actress, Zendaya. So, basically, Zendaya is the only person or thing nominated. So, yeah. I know that you had a couple things you wanted to talk about in relation to news.
Yeah, so they're in the news for two kind of big reasons. One, there was a little bit of concern over the actor's age difference. So I was worried it was going to be like this really huge age gap, but then I found out that the guy is like 36 and then the female lead, so Zendaya, is like 24. And that's not that huge of an age gap, personally, in my opinion, especially since they're both like consenting adults and they both had like a role in producing this film, so I'm pretty sure that Zendaya took, like, a financial approach to it and, like, co-produced and, like, co-directed. Like, she had a part behind the scenes, so she was also definitely involved in the production of this thing. So it wasn't, like, something that she got, I don't know, like, forced into a contract for, is kind of what I'm trying to say. And so, personally, I couldn't understand it. So I did look it up to see really what that age controversy was about, and I found out that it's kind of like the age-old thing where time and time again in Hollywood, you have these guys that are these male movie stars that are allowed to kind of age and still be the head of a production into their 40s, 50s, 60s. and then their female love interests always have to be below 40, but usually are like in their 20s. And that's seen as the desirable age for a woman in a film. So it was kind of like saying, this is just yet another thing where they have a older guy and a younger woman, and that's ridiculous. It plays into the whole ageism in Hollywood thing. Personally, I feel like since it was an integral part of their characters to have a older man in the relationship and a younger woman who's like less experienced, a little bit more unstable, due to the fact that it's her age, and they always touch on the fact that he is more experienced, he's had more lovers, more girlfriends, more experience in the film industry, all of that, it plays on that power dynamic constantly throughout the film. So I really think that that wasn't something I was concerned on. And then the second in the news thing was, why did they film this in black and white, despite the fact it was in modern times? And I'm just gonna like literally quote Zendaya on this because she put it best. So she said, well, you know, other than the fact that it's just pretty, it's beautiful, it adds timelessness to it. But also, there was a thought also about reclaiming the narrative of black and white Hollywood and black actors really having their moment at that time. So they just wanted to be able to reclaim the narrative. So I thought that was cool. So,
me too.
Do you believe the hype, Jess?
Definitely. I thought it was beautiful cinematography. Loved the black and white. I think it added depth to the conversation of the movie itself. I think making it black and white really focused on what they were saying and their actions, as opposed to the beautiful house itself or the beautiful clothes they were wearing. All of those visual distractions from the actions and conversation of the movie itself. So I really enjoyed that. Zendaya was amazing at her part. The other guy, I don't know his name, Malcolm, he was really good. The age gap is part of the premise of the movie itself and the relationship of the movie. Like, it's supposed to be an unequal power display. Like, that's what it is. So, yeah. And also, it's a good representation of a lot of relationships. Like, a lot of relationships have unequal power. And a lot of times that's representative in age gaps and financial security. So, yeah.
I kind of believe the hype. Like, I understand why cinematography was like so beautiful, and I was impressed with how it was in black and white, and I was impressed with certain aspects, like the acting was really great, but I was super undersold by it. It left me feeling pretty depressed. I wasn't super into the characters, or I didn't really care that much about their development. I just felt like I had listened to two people argue back and forth for like an hour and a half, and I was like, I didn't really get much out of it. I definitely would have gotten so much more out of it if it was like a play, which it makes sense that it would be a play because it was, you know, one setting, only two actors, and like it was just a prolonged scene. You know what I mean? So I would have been way more into it if like I saw it live, for example, because I would have been able to really feel that emotion that's right in front of me, and I think I would have been more sold. So it was all right in my opinion, but I think it's still a good production, if that makes sense. I'm not downplaying the production. So next question is just, this we don't have a hell of a lot to talk about. Same with like the last two things that we're going to talk about. Those first two, Bridgerton and Emily in Paris, were really like what we wanted to shell out more of. But honest review time for Malcolm and Marie. I thought it was good. It was a little too deep. It was not what I was expecting to be so deep. Part of it was a little bit like relatable in the sense that I understand how one small thing, like one small like argument, could then turn into like a 5-hour conversation where part of it you're like besties again and you're like hyping each other up, and then the other part you're just screaming. Like, I can understand that, and it honestly was like, oh, so that is kind of a normal thing, because you don't see other people's relationships, you don't know what's normal, quote unquote. But granted, this was also a super like toxic relationship and very abusive. So I was also kind of like, yeah, that's definitely what you don't want in a partnership, in a relationship. But yeah.
Yeah, I definitely thought it was an educational video. I thought it would be really good at relationship classes and women's support groups. Like, I think it would be
emotional abuse. This is what you don't have.
Yeah, this is what verbal abuse looks like. Don't do that.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a really real representation of a lot of relationships and a lot of what people not necessarily want shown on camera, but what they also don't see as unacceptable in their own relationship. And I think putting it on screen like that showed everyone that it's like, ooh, maybe we shouldn't talk to each other like that.
Yeah.
Or maybe we shouldn't yell across the house when we're angry. Like, you know, this is stuff that I see as absolutely abhorrent and unacceptable. You should not yell at your partner. You should not degrade them. You should not belittle them in an argument. Like, you shouldn't bring out their insecurities.
Oh my God. Win. Some of those things that they were saying, I was like, oh. My own heart hurts, like hearing
the,
this.
The bathtub scene when he's, like, quietly talking to her about her insecurities. And the only reason he's having that conversation is to degrade her and to win the argument.
And make her feel like shit. There were so many red flags that whole time. I was like, this is so bad. And then I also took comfort because my relationship isn't like that. Because at first when they were doing the back and forth and then they'd be like a little like snippy or whatever. The very beginning.
The very beginning is very similar to like how I've dealt with arguments where it like kind of, you kind of get into it, you kind of don't want to get into it, and then you kind of get into it more. But,
and again, the one relatable part was how a small thing can then turn into like a 5-hour discussion. But the more I was watching, the more I was like, oh, I could never do this. Like, if this was actually, I would be having so many breakdowns if that was actually how someone ever spoke to me. I could not.
Oh, I would have left like within the first 20 minutes. Yeah.
If you're constantly threatening to leave, you should probably actually
leave. You should leave. You should probably leave. Yes. Yeah, and just outside of the conversational wrongs, also the age gap is important in the presentation of the movie because it's not only supposed to be showing a toxic relationship, but it's also supposed to be showing the problems in pretending like age doesn't matter in a relationship. It does matter, not only for the financial security of it, like, if you've lived more years, you've done more things, you've had more experiences, you've learned more things. Like, those things matter. Badger and I are 7 years apart. That matters. He can't treat me like I'm 7 years older than I am, and I cannot treat him like he's 7 years younger than he is. I would never pretend like I have learned more than he has, or I've had more experiences than he has. We've had different experiences. I have learned subjects that he hasn't learned, but there's also a myriad of things that he knows that I may never know. And I mean, in some aspects, I think everyone should take that into account when they're in a relationship, regardless of age, but it matters because he knows and is conscious. And we, since the beginning of seeing each other, have been conscientious of the power dynamic and how he has to be considerate that he has a responsibility to own the maturity and the power that he holds that I don't have in the relationship.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Let's go to a more fun representation of Black cinema.
Okay. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. So this is a movie. And just hit us with the stats.
Yeah, so Ma Rainey's Black Bottom is actually originally a screenplay. I'm not sure how old it is, but I do know that it was pretty notable in the 80s, won several awards.
Wasn't Ma Rainey a real person too? Like, yes, it was also based on a real... Okay.
Yes, yeah, so Ma Rainey's Black Bottom is a theatrical representation of the Mother of the Blues. Gertrude Ma Rainey from the early 1900s. I believe she was born in like the late 1800s and then died around the mid 1920s, I think. Maybe 1930s.
Gotcha.
Give or take. But yeah, basically she was like hot in the early 1900s. And so this movie production of that came out in November 25th, 2020. 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. Can't argue with that logic. Nominations and Golden Globes for Best Performance by an Actress in a Motion Picture Drama. Of course, Viola Davis. She's a queen. And Best Performance for an Actor in a Motion Picture Drama. Chadwick Boseman. Obviously, he's a king. Rest in peace.
Yes.
If y'all don't know, Chadwick Boseman, aka the Black Panther, passed away in 2020 for his battle with colon cancer. So, yeah. And then he was also posthumously nominated for Outstanding Performance by a Male Actor in a Leading Role in a leading role. Yeah. So I think that's like two separate nominations,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. For like the same thing. I don't get it. But anyways. And then also the whole cast was nominated for Outstanding Performance by a Cast in a Motion Picture. And then also Viola Davis got the Outstanding Performance by a Female Actor in a Leading Role. I don't know what the difference is between the two leading actor, actress things, whatever. So I chose this because it's a historical production. You know, obviously a famous screenplay turned into a film. It had Viola Davis in it, Chadwick Boseman. Come on. Like, you gotta,
right.
You gotta note it up. And it got 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. So, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that Jessie had made a comment when she wanted to, like, feature this, that it tied similar to Malcolm and Marie, not only that it was also a play before, but that it was all on, like, one set with a pretty small cast, and it was all over the course of, like, one day. So it wasn't a long production. It just showed a whole plot over one single day. And also, it's notable because not only was Ma Rainey, like, a black singer in the early 1900s, which discrimination, all of that was still such a major part of her identity, but also that she was gay. So that, I mean, was that historically accurate, or did they just do that in the play? I don't know.
So I couldn't find a definite answer via Wikipedia, but I couldn't find a definite answer. But at least on the screenplay, it shows her as gay and having her mistress and her nephew there at the recording studio.
Yeah, and so, I was also a little bit sad too, like just briefly touching on Chadwick Boseman, when I don't usually get super wrapped up in the whole like celeb infatuation that a lot of everyone today seems to have. But I do distinctly remember when he died, I was actually really sad about it. So that was hard. I mean, Jess, what are your talking points on this? Because even though I thought, in my honest opinion, I guess I'll just put my review out there. I was really impressed with it. Again, I would have preferred to see it live as a play the way I think it was intended. I think I would have gotten a lot more out of it. However, I still really liked it. I was very invested in the characters, didn't totally see what was going to happen, and the ending made me so sad for a character that doesn't exist, really. So it definitely made me, like, feel things for people that aren't real. And I thought the actor performances all around, like, the whole cast, but especially Viola Davis and Chadwick Boseman, just fantastic. Like, I do understand why they got nominated for these things, and I think it's well deserved. That's my opinion.
Yeah, totally agree. And I just want to point out that I think it's interesting and makes a lot of sense that I've noticed more like screenplays turned into films, released on like Amazon Prime and you know, Netflix, and I'm sure Hulu has some too. But you know, over the pandemic, people aren't going to plays and stuff. And so it's cool that Hollywood seems to be bringing it into our homes. And especially, like, it seems to be a rise in, like, black theater. And
yeah,
I think that's really dope, too. So yeah, obviously, I thought the production was amazing. I love the blues. Ma Rainey's the mother of the blues. So,
and there's the music in there too, which was cool to enjoy. And they included at the end some like of her original recordings and stuff. So,
yeah,
I wonder if this will change the film/play industry forever. I wonder if this trend will continue post COVID or what. But
I hope so. I definitely enjoyed it. I mean, what's not to like? It had blues. It had Viola Davis.
I meant more the whole like releasing on streaming and foregoing in-person play or like movie theaters. I hope that doesn't happen.
I hope not. No. I
want to
see
these things live.
Yeah, me too. And I definitely agree that I would have rather had seen Ma Rainey's Black Bottom in theater as opposed to at home.
We actually agree that we both really liked it. So now, Bling Empire, last thing. This is a reality TV series, and Jess, we've got some stats.
Yep, released January 15th, 2021, so also pretty spanking new. 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, can't argue with that either. Show is based on the concept of like Crazy Rich Asians movie. Super duper good movie, definitely go watch
it. It was based on a book, too.
Which is based on a book, yes. Super good. Definitely read it/watch it. And Bling Empire is a reality TV show of Los Angeles's Asian American gazillionaires.
So the reason why I chose this show was, well, first of all, Jessie also wanted to pick it because it's one of the few reality shows that she enjoys. But I would agree with that. It happens to be kind of advertised right now. You know, usually reality TV doesn't have such a high rating on Rotten Tomatoes and doesn't get this much buzz and doesn't have that much depth to it. But this one definitely did. Granted, I didn't watch the full season, so I don't have a completely full picture. But normally, like, I don't really like reality TV. And Jess, I kind of want you to speak on that and give your kind of opinion because you have more of a strong opinion than me on this, I think.
Sure. I hate reality TV. I think it's garbage. I mean, like, whatever Housewives, whatever Jersey Shore, I think it's just garbage television for people to feel less like garbage because they watch more garbage people. But this one I actually liked, and I actually have watched the whole season since we last attempted to record this episode, and I still like it. There were parts that were definitely more like reality television-y midway through, but it's still the parts that I liked still came through. And the parts that I liked is that it's just not a bunch of rich white people like in a jerk off circle. Like that's what I like about it.
And it didn't seem super staged. Like a lot of it seemed like actual real circumstances that they were dealing with.
Yeah, and I liked the cultural aspect, and especially they talked a lot about the cross-cultural aspect of like being an American gazillionaire and being like an heir of a dynasty and stuff, you know? And that's interesting. Like, I don't find it interesting to hear some rich New Yorker whose face is unrecognizable from who she was when she was 30 because she's so plasticky. But I do think it's super interesting to see, like, the trust fund baby of the Song Dynasty, you know, host a Chinese New Year party on Rodeo Drive. Like,
yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah. So I don't know. I definitely hate the plastic surgery and the lip fillers. I think it looks trashy. I think it must be a rich people culture thing. Like you just
start
and then you can't stop. I don't know. But I think it looks gross.
Yeah.
And then also the parts that I didn't like that were like really reality TV is like the dramatic fighting, like the tiffs that they have where they like make a scene for no reason or like do shitty shallow things. That part's annoying to me, but I like the traveling. I like the clothes, of course. I love fashion. And then I love the cross-cultural aspect of like a gazillionaire who also practices Buddhism.
Right.
To me, that's fascinating and questionable, and you know, so
yeah,
So that's the part that I liked about it.
Yeah, I would agree with, like, the fillers in general. I think it has to be, like, a look, or it has to be an addiction thing, because they are definitely wealthy enough that there's no way that they're not getting the best plastic surgeons and the best products. So it's not like it's botched. And second of all, it's not like they don't have the money to reverse bad plastic surgery if necessary. So it's definitely purposeful. And I also don't really like the look, but again, maybe it's just the thing. It could be the rich culture. I don't know. It could just be the culture. We'll just chalk it up to that.
Yeah. I don't know. Chalk it up.
Yeah. And yeah. I really enjoyed this also. I'm also not a huge fan of reality TV. I don't watch anything super religiously other than like The Bachelor, Bachelorette, which is a very recent thing. I only started doing that within the last year, and it's kind of just fun. It's definitely sometimes I'm like, why am I watching this? But it's just a fun thing that Goldie and I do now. But anyways, I don't really like reality TV either. I did think this was a very interesting take on the lives of certain people that I would never have seen otherwise. And I also audibly gasped several times hearing about just like the wealth, the sheer wealth. Like when they were like, oh, I'm only paying $19,000 a month for, you know, rent, or this is a one pair of underwear is $200 alone, or like, yeah, I really just felt like going to Paris today, so let's just get on the private jet, go to Paris, have a shopping spree. I'm going to go into a jewelry store and pick out literally anything that my heart so desires just because I can, and then fly back to America the next day. That is the kind of wealth that just astounds me that it's there. And I can't even wrap my head around it sometimes. So it was also cool to see that level of wealth, if that makes sense. Like, it doesn't matter that they were flaunting it. Like, they got it. Flaunt it, whatever. It was just mind-blowing because I never see things like that.
Yeah, it was like a show, like a performance. Yeah, yeah, it was interesting. Yeah. And shiny. Okay.
Yeah, every time I saw the big jewelry, I was like, that's not costume jewelry. Like, that's a real gem.
Oh, my God. That's a giant-ass diamond. That is, yep. All real. Over her chest, yep. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I'm not into it. Like, if I had that much wealth, I would just essentially buy a designer and have them custom design all of my clothes. Hmm. I was thinking about that this morning. I'm like, why do they buy designer clothes that, like, other people can buy? Why wouldn't you just, like,
I think it's the clout, honestly. No, it's the clout of the name brand. It's the name brand 100%. Which, like, I don't understand why when you surpass that level of wealth, why a name brand matters to display your wealth. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't get it. Yeah, I don't know. I would just have them design all my clothes and jewelry, like, custom. That's what I would do. Yeah. Because I'm classy like that.
You look classy,
when I'm a gazillion billionaire. Yeah.
Yeah, from all the money you're going to make with peacekeeping.
As a civil servant, I'm going to make so much money.
That was kind of a mean joke on my end. I'm really sorry about that.
No, it's true. It's true. I'm fine with it. I've come to terms.
When I'm a gazillionaire, from all the money I'm going to make as a vet, I'll donate a lot to your cause. Maybe I can us to share a designer.
Okay, I would share a designer.
Even though we have no similar taste.
That's okay. That's fine. We'll just buy someone who's eclectic. They can design multiple things.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, cool. All right. A game plan. Game plan.
Glad we discussed this. It's very important.
Very important. Write it down. Put it on the list. Okay. So we gotta go. I need to go to work. I hope you all make good TV watching decisions and that you feel like garbage next time you watch reality television or Emily in Paris based off of my scathing reviews. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Thanks for joining us today on Coffee Talk, and I hope you have a great rest of your week. And sorry again for this being a week late, but yeah.
And for her dog barking.
Yes.
Yes.
Unless you like dog barking ASMR.
Yes.
That was a weird way to end it. Bye. Thank you for hanging out with Coffee Talk. Cover art is by our very own Jesse and Kat. Theme music is by Spencer Thutt. Background music is produced under Creative Commons. Coffee Talk is an independent podcast supported by two struggling 20-somethings. So we shamelessly beg our listeners to support the podcast by subscribing to our Patreon or donating through our website, coffeetalkpod.com. Talk to you soon.